Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this very episode, we will be discussing if binge-watching is dying, everything is coming up IP these days, how we would survive Batman, it'll make sense, I promise, and our topic this week is why can't video game movies get it right? I mean, some do, but most, frankly, do not. So we're going to discuss that and what filmmakers need to remember when adapting them, because we know. And then later in our show, we have an interview with the executive director of the Beloit International Film Festival to discuss that event. So let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm a fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Excelente. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And Troy Heinrichs.
I am robot.
Yeah, oh, Troy will not be here this week. If you happen to see him on social media, he'll probably give you a lovely excuse about a retreat or anything else. But the truth is, he wants to play Horizon. That's what it is. That new PlayStation 5 game. That's really what it is. He secretly is just devoted to doing that. And John will actually be off for 2 weeks after this, or a week or two at least. A week at least, maybe two, right?
A week at least, maybe two after this.
So there we go. We've covered all those bases. Apparently, Amanda and I don't get to take much time off. So
I feel like I've taken
Amanda
plenty of time
here
off
last week.
Oh yeah, that's yeah. Right. And I wasn't here the week before. Never mind. What am I talking about?
It just rotates. It just rotates.
Oh my God. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Hey, fun stories. You know, we're going to review Dog and Uncharted later in the show, but I think this is actually really, really exciting news. The theaters are popping. Movie theaters were busy. Between Amanda and I don't
John, a little too poppin',
hang
I
on,
might
hang
add.
On, we'll get to your story. But between Amanda and I, we went to three different movies, and all three were busy. Like, not pandemic busy, like busy. It just felt almost like old times. I hate to say it, but old times. And it just showed, I mean, Dog being popular really kind of showed that all kinds of movies can work. You know what I mean? It's not just blockbusters, because Dog is a very small independent movie, and it's, you know, $18, $20 million opening, whatever it was. And, you know, Uncharted, $50 million, 4 day week. I mean, this is awesome news. It's fantastic. Agreed?
Yeah, very much so. Agree. I mean, I think people are starting to really come out of their shells now. And it's actually, as far as mental health is concerned, that's probably better for them. And people are risking being out a little bit more. I was out all day yesterday. I went to 7 different breweries, and they were each and every single one of them slammed. And
7?
It sounds like you were slammed. That's what it sounds like.
How are you here today?
That's where that voice comes from.
That's where the voice comes from. But the men in my family actually have this amazing ability of, well, it's not really the men in the family. It's actually me in the family. There's always a me in the family, which
the one with the drinking problem. I got it. Yeah.
We have a drinking problem that the next morning, no hangovers ever.
What?
I've never had a hangover in my life.
Are you kidding me?
Are you serious?
I am not kidding you.
On the whole cruise, you're going with Brian and I, and we're going to see if we can put this to the test.
Oh, yeah. That's fine. I may get sloppy. Actually, on the whole cruise, the last one, I got super freaking sloppy one night.
No hangover?
It wasn't even at night. It was during the day. Courtney and I went to one of the bars, and we just drank tequila after tequila and after tequila.
Say that 3 times real fast.
Yeah. She had to shepherd me back to the ship, and when she got me back on the ship, we met up with everybody else in the tavern we took over, because we took over this Irish bar in the center of the ship. As soon as one of our listeners saw that I was blasted out of my mind, decided he was going to continue the trend, and he gave me even more. Scott Clark led me to a couple of different places, because at one point he goes, you need some food and you need some water. And so he's got some funny stories. So the funny things that I did at that point, I went and took a nap. I took my nap. I got up. I threw up once, and then I was right as rain for the rest of the day.
I felt like that was the longest story to just say it, and I didn't have a hangover.
Yep.
It was still kind of funny, though.
Yeah.
It's great.
Gross. Absolutely gross, but kind of funny. All right. Well, back to movie theaters, you binge drinker. We're going to, by the way, cruise at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We're going to go in 2023. I should plug that. Email us if you're interested. It's a 7-day cruise. We're going to be on Wonder of the Seas, biggest ship in the whole world. and there's only so many rooms. So we got to get them locked up if you want to go. It's next June in 2023. But back to the movie theaters. So crowded theaters across the board. But Amanda apparently had this experience that I haven't heard the full details of, but I can't wait to hear because I never really have problems in movie theaters. I don't know. Maybe it's the luck of the draw or what. Maybe I don't let things get to me as much. I'm focused. I am willing to tell people to shut the hell up if they're being a-holes, whatever it is. Amanda went to one. Apparently, it was a, I don't know, it was at a senior living center or something.
Basically.
So what happened? Because you left. You didn't even watch the movie.
I didn't even watch the movie. So, okay, let me preface this story by saying I'm late to everything. I was late to this recording today. I'm late to everything.
What?
I was 20 minutes early to the trailers. Actually, hold 30 on. Minutes. I was sitting in my seat well within 20 minutes.
I just want to take a note of this date and time of what you just said, because the next time you try to tell people that you're never late.
I don't ever say I'm never late. I will admit that. I own that. I'm late.
She says she's not late when it's work related. That's what she said before.
Yeah.
Right. All right.
If it's work related, or I try for the most part to be on time to movies, but my definition of on time differs from Aaron's.
Yeah, my definition is pretty clear. It just means on time.
You know? He means before the trailers start. Mine means
that's
before
what on
the
time
movie
means.
Starts.
Yeah, it's on time.
But well, mine is before the actual movie starts, because I know there's 20 minutes of trailers. Anyway. So I get there. I am well, I was in the parking lot alone, like 40 minutes early, because originally I had planned to go see one showing at a different theater in my area. It sold out. So then I was like, oh, I'll just go to the next showing at this other theater. So I get my seat. I get it all picked out. Thanks, A-List. I get inside. I get my popcorn. I get my drink. It's already kind of busy, but not too crazy in there. And I go into the theater and I'm like, Jesus Christ, is every senior citizen in the Tri-County area in this movie theater? Because it looked like it and it smelled like it. And so I looked at my seat. There was somebody, apparently a couple decided to sit directly next to me. And I was like, well, I'm not going to sit there anymore because that just seems like a bad time. And it was nearly sold out. Like, I mean, it was packed, and not in the sense of like pandemic packed, like I'm talking nuts to butts. Everybody's in a seat next to somebody you don't know.
Nuts to butts. I haven't heard that one in a while. I like it.
So I decide to sit in AMC. They have like these, you know, couple seats. They're really handicap seats, accessible. There's nobody sitting in them. So I was like, well, I'll just move there and I'll sit in this seat. And I'm sitting there trying to just relax. I'm like, ooh, this is going to be an Amanda day. I'm going to do a double feature. Like, this is going to be perfect. I'm so excited. And I don't know, it probably took maybe 10 minutes before the first argument broke out. And it's not like, hey, you're in my seat. It's I'm going to pace back and forth, up and down throughout the theater, arguing about my seats.
Are you kidding
and saying
me?
That you're, yes, there was an entire row, the first row, like where the bar is, not the bottom row, but the.
It's like the middle of the theater, right?
Yeah. And there's probably, I don't know, like 10 people in this group sitting in these seats. And this old lady comes up to them and she's like, you're in my seats. And the family is just like hovering behind me, which if you don't know me, that's one of my like, it makes me tweak. I don't like people standing right behind me. I just don't like it. It makes me super uncomfortable. So now I'm already like on my edge, on the edge of my seat. Like, can you get the fuck back? Get off of me. And this lady just continues to argue. The lady sitting in the seats, the woman sitting in the seats is like, look, ma'am, I'm showing you that these are my tickets. And the lady, the older woman, just continues to argue. And then she's yelling at her family who are sitting in the second row, because, again, it's super sold out.
That's amazing.
So they're sitting the second row from the actual screen, the very bottom. She's yelling at them like from across the theater about the seat situation. We are now encountering trailers. So I'm trying to enjoy my time here and I'm not. And then she brings the manager in and the manager is like, sorry, lady, you're wrong. Go sit down.
I'm sure that
went over well. That was the first one. There were two more encounters exactly like that. And I don't know what was happening. I don't know why that day was such a bad day for people to understand how seats work. But they're assigned. It shouldn't be this hard.
You know what I bet it is? I bet many of them haven't been to a theater in a couple years and they weren't used to the assigned seating thing, because for a long time, AMC was just show up and go. and they just moved to assigned seating a couple of years ago. So maybe they haven't gone through the entire pandemic.
They knew about assigned seating. They were arguing about people being in their seats, but they were just too dumb to understand how letters work. Because he's like, D, row D, that's in the bottom. She's like, that's not what I paid for. He's like, that's literally what you paid for. You paid for row D. You're trying to get into row K.
D. Have you ever played bingo? I know you have. Look at your hair.
So it was just, it was a long, after the third time it happened, like three separate groups, three separate occasions, I was like, I'm just leaving. Oh, I just grabbed my stuff and I just left.
That's too bad.
Yeah, that was probably the smart move, because if you were in Florida, someone would have gotten shot.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I'm in Rockford. It's likely someone might get shot here too.
You said likely. It's actually happened in Florida, and it's usually some old person.
It's true. That is true. There's the trials going on with that one, but way to bring it down, John. So
hey, it's still funny.
I admire that you left. I mean,
I almost said something, but I was like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to be that person. I was trying to do a self-care day, which meant like, you're not going to feel anxious. You're not going to be stressed. Like, you're just going to have a good day for yourself.
Sure.
And if I get into it with a 85-year-old grandmother and her two grandchildren are there, and all 14 of her children, I'm going to just ruin everybody's day.
You can't win.
So I just shut my mouth and left.
Good for you. I'm proud of you for shutting your mouth and leaving. I'm just sad you ruined your mead day, because apparently, I guess really old people don't know how to sit. I don't really know what the problem was. Because I was in when I went and saw Dog, same situation. It was much more of an older audience. I hate to say it, but I'm a little closer to it than I used to be. But still, I don't understand when people act all weird like that. But I didn't have any of those problems. Like, there was one moment where somebody in the very beginning had their phone on, and some old dude yelled at him to turn his damn phone off, and that was it. And nobody was against that. We're like, yeah, I'm okay with that one. You do what you gotta do.
Also, so I need to acknowledge that I have probably the worst resting bitch face in the world. I just, it screams, don't come near me when I have this face on. It's just don't. And this couple, they decided to change their seats because they didn't like that people were sitting too closely to them. And, you know, I get it. It's fine. The row in front of me, in front of this handicap wheelchair accessible seat, that entire row was open. The entire thing. I'm sitting more off to the left. I'm not even sitting dead center in the middle. This couple, these two people, go and sit directly in front of me. And before they sit down, they make eye contact with me. And she says something like, kind of basically, maybe we shouldn't sit here since we're sitting directly in front of this person. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody else in this entire row. And he just makes eye contact with me as he sits down. And I was like, the audacity. I don't know. I'll never understand people that want to sit that close to strangers.
Hey, but on the plus side, movie theaters are starting to sell out again. I think that's
yeah,
exciting.
They are.
And even if you left, they still got your ticket. That's all I care
they
about.
They did. That is why I did not like refund my ticket or whatever. I was like, you guys can have it. Pay the movie.
That's so sad and funny. Both of my showings were great. I had no problems. Uncharted was great. You know, a lot of fun. Fans were there. Dog was great. Very different kind of audience. I mean, it really, there's a lot of older people, but they're, you know, vets, because it really appeals to military vets and that sort of thing. But also families. There's a lot of families there because it's a freaking dog movie and people love mm-hmm. movies about dogs, and Channing Tatum is pretty. So those two things bring people in. I was really surprised how busy Dog was, like shocked that it was as popular as it was, but I was happy. All right, let's move into some movie and TV discussions. So Stranger Things was renewed for a fifth and final season. But more importantly, well, I mean, that's probably important if you're a fan. But more importantly, the nine episodes of season four will be released in two batches, part one and part two. Part one comes in May, part two comes in July. And, you know, Ozark just did this as well with their final season. But Ozark had 14 episodes, so 7 and 7 feels a little bit more substantial. 9 means 5 and 4. Or maybe 4.5, 4. I don't know how they're breaking it up.
They cut the episode right in the middle. It's
right
like
in the middle.
Intermission, and then it breaks for commercial.
That would be amazing, honestly. I think it would be great.
That would be very cool.
So more and more streamers are walking away from their biggest shows, from dumping all at once and going back to more traditional water cooler friendly styles of releases like weekly, Boba Fett. All of Disney's have been weekly. Amazon Prime is doing more and more weekly. I mean, you know, they actually did The Boys was a binge the first year, and then they moved to a weekly release model. HBO Max is doing weekly. And, you know, episode batches are kind of not being done as much because I think people don't keep talking about the shows. That seems obvious with social media, right? If a Netflix drops 8 episodes at once, people talk about it for the weekend, maybe a week, don't hear about most of them again. So what are you thinking? Do you think binge watching or binge drops are going to start dying? Because I really feel like the Stranger Things and the Ozark thing is Netflix saying we can't really commit to weekly because it kind of goes against everything we've sold people on for the last 5 years, but we want to get closer to that option. So what do you think? Do you think dropping and binge sections is going away, or do you think they're just going to keep experimenting with what works?
I tend to think that they are probably going to end up experimenting with what works. I am finding that though I used to be very against the idea of weekly, once I got accustomed to having streaming services provide me with my entertainment, a lot more of the things I'm watching are things that are a weekly drop now, and I'm finding that I'm enjoying them more. I'm able to process more of what's happening. I'm able to spend some time on the internet and not be completely spoiled by whatever happened in each episode or something to that effect. You know, it's just – and it's also – it takes the pressure off of my time to be able to have like a weekly release too, because – I watch my show and I sit down, I watch it, and then I can move on with the rest of my day. And that's actually kind of nice.
I would say for the most part, it really depends on the type of show. Like if it's just some sort of a comedy or something, I don't need a week to week release. Like How I Met Your Father, I wish that wasn't a weekly release. I wish that was just a bingeable show. But something like Stranger Things or The Witcher, things like that, I can see the value in releasing it on a weekly schedule, even if I, you know, sort of prefer it to be bingeable. I understand from the business perspective why they would do it that way. And I do like that with binge shows, when they drop the whole season, you're kind of forced to get through it as quickly as possible to avoid any spoilers.
That's true.
Because people are jerks. So if you're on the same schedule, if you're forced to be on the same schedule as everyone else, that the chances of that are diminished. I mean, unless someone gets access to a screener or something and releases it illegally, you can enjoy and go through your work week knowing, okay, I didn't have to watch 9-14 episodes of a television show in an entire weekend just so that way I didn't have it ruined for me. That's, I think, the biggest benefit for a viewer is not having to do that. But I don't know. I mean, I get it. I have gotten so accustomed to having the binge setting where I can just get through one show and I'm done with it. And then I can move on to something else. So I feel very completed with it. With weekly releases, there's so many shows that I have to try to remember what all I'm watching so I don't forget to go back and watch the next episode.
Oh my God. What did you do in the old days, Amanda? Like before streaming, when you had to do that?
It wasn't this bad. It was not there were not this many good shows that I was like, oh, I really can't wait for the next episode. It was like, you know, maybe you had five. I have five that I watch that are just on network shows. Like I can't even imagine streaming.
I can't agree with you more in terms of the spoiler thing. I mean, it just gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, we kind of talked about it last week with magazines, you know, and Entertainment Weekly, and how that as a site has become so spoilery and crappy. But it's people too, man. Peacemaker came out and there's a big cameo there. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but there's a big cameo at the end of Peacemaker. And I literally just opened Twitter. I was not looking for anything Peacemaker. I don't even know why I was on Twitter probably to check a Wordle or something. And sure enough, boom, there it was. Spoiler. I'm like, God damn it. I literally just woke up having a chance to watch this stupid show and people just have no couth or respect for anyone else. Mm-hmm. And I saw outlets doing the same thing, spoiling the crap out of it. You'll never guess who showed up. And then there's a picture of them. Well, I can guess pretty well if you show me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
the episode just dropped in the middle of the night. How are you guys going ahead and start talking about it first thing in the morning? That's kind of BS.
Because they need clicks.
I, Yeah, I remember waking up that morning and somebody on Facebook had posted, if you don't want to be spoiled by what happened on Peacemaker, do not open Twitter or Instagram or Facebook anymore than you already have to see this. And I was like, all right, cool. And considering what what's going on in my personal life, I was able to sit at work and watch the episode at like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, John.
So I can get it completely out of my way and not give a shit. So it was great.
I hope you know that's recorded for posterity.
What are they going to do?
That's true. Hey,
I will add that The Legend of Vox Machina, I've enjoyed how they did it, where they release like 3 episodes each week. It's more, obviously it's condensed over those weekly time periods, but then you have more than just one episode you get to watch. So you don't feel like I'm clinging for more. You are at least satisfied having something for that week, or you can spread it out over your weekend, however you want to do it. But then you still have to wait till the next week to get like the next segment of episodes. And I do like that. I don't like this unnecessary dividing of seasons. This is starting to irritate me. Going back to your question about Stranger Things splitting it up between a part one and part two, that is starting to get on my nerves. I was fine with it for pandemic related reasons, but if it's not a scheduling thing, if it's not like a lot of shows, they'll stop in for the fall series. They'll stop for like winter break, basically.
Yeah, Walking Dead's been doing that for years.
Yeah, that's fine. But if you're doing this just because you want to split it up, that's aggravating to me, because it's not, just call it 2 separate seasons if that's what it is, or keep the season together.
You know, they're doing it because they're trying to compete with weekly release. They'll say whatever they got to say
I'm sure, to their investors. I agree.
We can't commit to weekly because that goes against everything Netflix has sold itself on. But we got to get closer, guys, because these guys are building way more word of mouth than we are. Like, people keep talking about their shows. Nobody's talking about our shows. People stopped talking about Ozark a week in. Had a great final scene that people would have talked about the whole weekend.
Right.
Well, they did. They didn't talk about the rest of the show. They just talked about that final scene because everybody watched it the opening weekend. And I think that they're realizing that that's hurting their subscription numbers, because Disney... Think whatever you think about Boba Fett and all their Star Wars and Marvel shows, but they build up a consistent social media presence, which gets people interested, which brings more people to the show. All their numbers tend to grow as the show goes on, where Netflix just gets what it gets. I mean, they do have their hits, but I don't think they have as many water cooler talks as other streaming networks.
Well, and I think the other...
Netflix has actually had weekly drops, but it's not on any of their big titles. It's always on some of their smaller titles. And
what has been weekly on Netflix? Like a reality show or something?
It's The Baking Show. Chelsea Handler had a weekly. There was a couple comedy shows that had a couple weeklies, but they were nothing that was actually promoted widely.
Gotcha.
I think it was like their idea of testing pretty heavily. The thing that I think is, like, when I think about watching these big drops anymore, is that, you know, we've talked about this from a little bit here and a little bit there, but I always feel kind of held hostage by the internet so that I have to watch these things. And it's possible, and it's exhausting. And I think that exhaustion is probably what affected my view on the second season of Witcher. It probably was a really great season. I was kind of nonplussed with it, but it was probably a really great season. I've heard some great things from other people, but it didn't blow my skirt up. Part of the reason why I didn't blow my skirt up, I sat down and watched it, and I was in one solid mood the entire time, and that solid mood was probably not conducive to being able to enjoy the show as freely as most people.
And it affects it.
We're probably enjoying. What's that?
The mood does affect what you watch. I mean, you and I talked about this on our Patreon bonus episode for Malignant. How when I first watched it, I did not like that movie at all. And then I rewatched it and I really kind of loved it. And I think a lot of that had to do with where my mood was when I watched it the first time. And also not kind of understanding the kind of movie it was until too late in the game. So, you know, I don't think people take that into account. Like, if you're watching a binge show and you're having a bad day and you watch 8 episodes, even though you might watch them all, you might ultimately just come away going, But if you watched it a different over week to week, that mood might change because you're watching it different weeks. And you're also building up anticipation. You have time to have your own thoughts about what might happen when it ends on a cliffhanger, because they all still end on a cliffhanger, whether it's binge or not. And then, you know, you get time to have some thoughts and talk to people and get some theories. Theories, I think, really drive growth of a show.
I think like a show like Archive 81 on
Netflix.
Archive 81, a fantastic show. I was able to sit down and really enjoy it, and sure, I binged it. I didn't watch it as heavily as I watched other things, but instead of it taking a day, I gave it 3 days to sit down and watch all of it. That show would have benefited greatly by having a weekly release, because you'd have people talking about it every single week. Oh my God, this brand new show is doing something completely different, and it's a whole new story. And I haven't heard anyone mention it since the week it dropped. And it's a shame, because I want to see more of that show come up. But if it's not being talked about, then that's just not working. Cowboy Bebop, that's another one where it was something that dropped. It was dropped in its entirety. I think it would have been better served if it was dropped week by week, because that was a fantastic show they put together. But there was too many people naysaying it at Jump Street, and it really, if I feel like it really affected people giving it a shot or not.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
The other thing with internet building and social media presence is when you have exciting, when you do a binge show, you're not going to have people collectively talking about the great moment of a single episode. They're going to talk about the great moment of the entire series. Mm-hmm. That goes back to your Ozark example.
Yeah.
There were a lot of really cool moments, but because it's a binge show and the whole season's dropped, we're only going to talk about the big scenes that happened. We're not going to talk about the big moment of every episode. Whereas when you get the weekly releases, you have time, like Euphoria is a really great example. Every single week, the entire internet breaks out in hives talking about every, you know, crazy moment of that episode. If Euphoria was released on a binge capacity, they just released the entire season, people would only talk about the biggest moments. And so it does hurt them in that capacity too, mm-hmm. because people don't have time to ruminate on the cool things, even the smaller moments that are maybe really impactful, you forget about them by the time you get to the end, because now something else crazy has happened and you're going to focus on that and talk about that and make memes about that.
I think Netflix especially is missing, the number one thing people don't want is commercials. They can watch it on their own terms. They want to be able to watch it on their own terms. Absolutely. But if it comes out week to week, they can just binge it at the end. I mean, I've had that happen on Boba Fett. I waited until the end because I didn't like it. So I really wasn't going to, you know, keep coming back, because it just made me, I knew I would quit if I did that.
That's what I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you have it go weekly, you know, whatever is best for that particular show, people can watch it on their own terms no matter what, especially if you do it weekly. And I just don't want commercials. That's literally the only thing I care about. That's what I can't have. If you bring commercials into it, I will not watch your show, period. I just won't watch it. There are several things on network TV. I won't even touch them because I'm not going through commercials. If it's on Hulu and I don't have ads, like Big Sky, I watch that on Hulu. Okay, now I'm in and I give that one a shot. But otherwise, I will not do commercials. Just keep commercials out of it and I'll watch it on whatever terms I feel are appropriate to me. All right. I feel like we should probably move on. We've talked about this one ad nauseum. But speaking of shows and a lot of, you know, Netflix and all that jive. Well, there's been a lot of announcements on sequels and renewals over the past week. Peacemaker's definitely getting season two. How I Met Your Father is getting season two. Star Trek's coming back with a fourth movie with the Chris Pine crew, which I'm pretty excited about that one, actually. Yellowstone has another new series coming with 1932. There's basically going to be a Yellowstone channel at some point. Blue's Clues is getting a new movie. Nostalgia's everywhere. They're even bringing Teen Wolf back, for Christ's sake. Everything is about intellectual property these days. And I just kind of want to know if that concerns you guys, or, you know, are you worried that we're not going to be getting original stuff popping like we've gotten the last couple years, like The Witcher and stuff like that? Ozark itself. I mean, just, are you worried about that with all these IPs?
I'm not right now. And I feel like the film side of things has cornered more of our indie and original content, because it's so much easier for them to release something on a streaming platform or straight to VOD or something like that. So our television shows may be focused more on IP, but I feel like if we still take that look at films, that's where we'll get more of our original content. And at some point, these series creators, like even Netflix, especially Netflix, I feel like they're going to have to be able to compete with all of Disney's endless TV shows that are, they're new, but based on, you know, MCU or Star Wars IP. And so at some point, I think we'll get some of the original content again from Netflix. But I think right now they're focusing so hard on just trying to stay afloat and stay alive because their numbers have not been super great this year so far.
Yeah.
I don't care. Just entertain the crap out of me.
It's fair. Make good stuff.
Yeah, there's, I mean, this is all good stuff. Peacemaker season two, yes, please. I'll take more Peacemaker. Peacemaker doesn't even feel like it's a genre show to some degree because what? It's just turned the idea of a comic book superhero show on its head by making him a moron. It's more akin to like The Tick than it is to anything else that's out there.
I would agree with
and,
that,
and I'm okay with that.
And he's not really a hero, and him realizing he's not as heroic as he believes he is throughout the show. I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
I was actually pleasantly surprised that John Cena can act. I mean, all the years I kind of thought he couldn't, but I'm like, all right, he's got a couple beats in there that I'm pretty impressed with.
Yeah. Why are you doing your face exercises again?
That's funny. I don't mind IP. I mean, bring it, as long as I'm still getting original stuff too. I like a good mix. The only IP concern I have, intellectual property, the only concern I have is I want to love Star Wars more than I do, and it would benefit them in my mind if they stopped Skywalker attachments. Everything has to be around the Skywalkers as if they didn't have this huge world. Mm-hmm. I know we've talked about it before, but that's like my biggest IP concern. Get the Skywalkers out of your Star Wars show so I can enjoy just the Star Wars show. Because I feel like that's just fan manipulation every time a Skywalker shows up. That's what I think.
And I just want them to care. That's all.
Yeah.
You know,
or care. Care.
Yeah. I just want them to care about the storytelling they're trying to do and use things that are developed in a good way. Like when I did watch Boba Fett, they mentioned something that was came out of nowhere for me because they've explicitly said some of this all this content doesn't really exist in the Star Wars universe, but they mentioned the Rancor riding Witches of Dathomir, and which is something that comes out of one of the novels. So the fact that they brought it back up again in this show, it brings me some hope that we'll be, you know, seeing some of the cooler things that are in the Star Wars universe that doesn't have a lot to do with the Skywalkers or the Boba Fetts or anything else. So yeah, I just want them to care. It's what, and that's how I feel about any of these properties that we're going to be talking about, especially in the topic. You know, yeah. The thing is, if you start caring about the stories and use the characters properly, you know, if you build it, they will come.
All right, Costner, good segue. I also want to mention, and this is more of a mention than really a talk, but I thought it was pretty cool because of all the things being developed nearly 30 years after their Oscar ring collaboration on Forrest Gump, Tom Hanks, Robert Zemeckis, and Eric Roth are going to reunite for a new movie. They are adapting an innovative graphic novel called Here. Hanks is going to star in it. Zemeckis is going to direct it. Roth is going to write it. And it was published in 2014 by illustrator Richard McGuire, and it centers on one room. It's literally in one room and chronicles the events that have occurred in that space over the course of hundreds of thousands of years. And I know it sounds odd, like, why would that be exciting? It just, that trio together, you know, and the fact that Zemeckis and Hanks made Castaway work, which is basically a guy in his volleyball, I just get really excited about this. I'm really curious to see how they make something that takes place in just one room and make it a really exciting feature-length film. So that got me stoked. Okay. I'm the only one. Remember,
you love the Hanks. Love the Hanks. There's just not much more to add to it.
Fine. Also, Hanks is in that new Elvis movie, which made that look interesting. I really wasn't interested in a freaking Elvis movie, but Tom Hanks shows up. And like I keep telling people, Tom Hanks makes everything better except Chet. That's all there is to it. Remember, you can find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can Google that if you don't know what that reference means. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or we're on Twitter at Buy Popcorn. You can also email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com if you're interested. Our show is independently funded, therefore all of our expenses are from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. Once you sign up, you get immediate access and to all the content in your respective tier. We have two different episodes that go up based on different tiers. One's called Bad Movie Night, which we have just created its own feed for the older episodes from the vault, but all the newer stuff is only on Patreon. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We just talked about Malignant, which is a messed up movie that I think we had a pretty fun conversation about. And we'll have our bonus episode there as well at the end of the month. Okay. Now that's Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Spoiler-free reviews. We've got two reviews to talk about. Apparently, only me saw both of them because Amanda couldn't stomach she really doesn't like old people is what I heard. That's what I heard.
Well, the first one that you saw that I was hoping to see that I didn't get to see is Dog. Mm. With a dog named Lulu by his side, Army Ranger Briggs races down the Pacific coast to make it to a soldier's funeral on time. This stars Channing Tatum. He is pretty much the primary cast member, from my understanding. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate? That's mostly accurate. Falls on his shoulders.
Yep.
Are those shoulders buff enough to hold it up?
My God, this guy's got his shirt off. He's shirtless more than the dog is.
Oh my God, I was going to ask you about that too.
Yeah, that dog's got a vest on most of the movie. He's walking around without a shirt on all the time. He carries the movie. And, you know, I think it's hard to not like Channing Tatum, even though I feel like he's very similar in most movies. I mean, he's kind of the same, except 21 Jump Street. He plays kind of adult there, but overall, Channing Tatum is Channing Tatum in most movies. And some movie stars have that connection. You know, I think Brad Pitt has it. Harrison Ford had it when he wasn't 112. You know, different actors have that connection to the audience where it's just hard to root against him, even when he's playing someone that's really struggling. And here he really plays someone that's really struggling. He has PTSD, but he still wants to get back into the fight. He has to get the approval of his commanding officer to actually come back into combat because he had a brain injury and they're concerned that he actually will damage his brain more by going into combat. But if he gets the okay, then he can get back in the fight. So he has to do this thing, which is take his dead fellow soldier's dog or his dead fellow soldier's dog, who is also in the fight and basically has PTSD, take him to the fellow soldier's funeral, and then his commanding officer will sign off on it. And it's a kind of a moving story, and not kind of, it is a moving story, and Channing Tatum does a really good job with it.
That's awesome. You mentioned him being shirtless. The reason mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about this is because
to make me feel bad. Yes, it did. No. Thank you for bringing it up. He is ripped and I need to eat less ice cream.
He has his first directing credit as a co-director for this film, mm-hmm. and he's reunited with Magic Mike producer Reed Carolan. So I wondered if there was going to be a lot of moments of shirtless Tatum because of the Magic Mike attachment. And also because I feel like part of the draw for Channing Tatum, regardless of age, like I do fully believe that a lot of these older women are like, heck yeah, let's see Channing Tatum without his shirt on. I have to imagine that there were some sexy scenes for him, even though it's a vet movie about a dog.
I mean, he's not rubbing himself down in oil or anything. He's not lubing up. But I do have to wonder, because there are several, there's probably two or three shirtless scenes, but it is, you know, it's directed by Reed Carolan and Channing Tatum. Like, they co-directed the movie together. And I kind of wonder who's the one that suggested this? Like, who,
right.
Was it Reed or was it Tatum? Was he just sitting there going, I know they're going to like it. I mean, you got to have my shirt off. Or is Reed like, guy, you got to take your shirt off. I mean, all your movies where you're shirtless do better.
And Tatum's just super shy. Oh, I don't want to.
Yes, the guy who put together Magic Mike is very shy. He's just so shy. He was a stripper, for crying out loud. I think he's fine. He's very talented, very charming. He's great. Dog is wonderful too.
Okay, so did you ever see Megan Levy?
Yes, vet dog very film? Good film. Yeah, very
is
good
this film. Okay, this gives me similar vibes. There's so many vet films and so many vet with dog films that are available in plethora, and this one kind of sounded similar, where it's about the journey of these two friends, essentially a dog and
reluctant
a veteran.
Friends. Yeah, reluctant friends. Yeah,
and them overcoming their trauma together. Is that kind of what it is then?
Essentially, because, I mean, they both obviously they have PTSD, and Lulu is kind of on a journey to be put down. You know, I'm not going to spoil what happens, but it's not as dire as you might think. It's unfortunately for some of these animals, it's necessary. It's a sad thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's hard to get into. It's just, it's a sad thing. These animals really save countless lives with, depending on whatever their skill set is, they really truly are heroes. I don't think they get nearly enough respect for what they do. Everybody loves dogs, but I don't think these dogs get enough respect for what they do. Even from us, from the government, you know, from the military. I don't think even the military respects them as much as I think they should. So
there's actually a special on HBO that Channing Tatum executive produced called War Dog, A Soldier's Best Friend, which is about the relationship between them two. Mm. So he must have a vested interest in this topic, I would presume.
He's anyway. I've seen interviews with him, and he very much is a guy who respects vets. And, you know, he's definitely, he understands and respects the honor of that. He loves dogs. I mean, he said that some of this film actually came from a relationship with his dog that passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh
yeah. So, I mean, it is, it's hard to not like a movie where it's a charming guy, a lovely, you know, dog who obviously has some psychological issues, but also he only has those issues because of what he did for us. You know what I mean? Like what he did for his command, for his troops, for the people that he was with. It's not like he asked for any of this. He was just being a dog doing what he was taught to
Isn't
do.
Isn't it a she?
She, sorry.
Lulu?
Whatever. He, she, you know what? Dog. It's a dog. I don't remember. I didn't check the luggage. You know what I'm saying? I didn't, the undercarriage. I didn't go there.
We should also not presume the dog's gender.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah. I don't know which way the dog leans. But it's, yeah. Lulu is very good. Lulu is a very sweet dog. They have a great kinship that carries the film.
So it sounded like overall it was a really great film. If the full price of admission were $10, what are you giving Dog?
I give it $7, but keep in mind, like, I'm a sucker for a good dog movie. So, you know, and Channing Tatum just makes it better. But I, and now if you're a cat person, you might not like it. I don't know. But if this movie was called Cat, I wouldn't watch it. So there you go. Who wants to watch that? That's a horror movie. I don't want to watch a guy driving across country.
They are in a lot of horror movies.
Yeah, where they belong, in the cupboard.
There's maybe only three dog horror movies.
Exactly. And I just can't watch those because they're just so fictional. Come on.
Right.
Come on.
Right. Cujo, never happened.
Rabies. That dog had fight it off and then you just loved him like a good boy.
He's so good. Look at him. All right, Aaron. So you also checked out Uncharted over the weekend.
Sure did.
Because, of course, Amanda couldn't make it to the movies.
She's too busy. Yeah,
I'm going to go see it today.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
as long as the oldies don't scare you off. I don't want to have that blue hair.
It's not about scaring me, it's about irritating me.
So based off the popular PlayStation video game, you've got Uncharted. Street smart Nathan Drake is recruited by seasoned treasure hunter Victor Sullivan, who's played by Mark Wahlberg, to recover a fortune amassed by the Ferdinand Magellan and lost 500 years ago. Yay. They get challenged by Antonio Banderas, who's Santiago Macondo, also yay. If Nate and Sully can decipher these clues, they'll solve the world's oldest mystery and stand to find a $5 billion treasure. Okay, that's actually a real yay. And perhaps even Nate's long-lost brother, but only if they can learn how to work together.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow. Dun, dun, dun. All right, Aaron. So I know you played the game. That's one of your favorite games around.
Every one of them.
I stand in – what's that?
Every single one of them, including Lost Legacy. I played every single Uncharted game.
Yeah. But I stand before you as someone who hasn't played the game, and I'm wondering if it's important for me to have played the game to be able to enjoy this movie.
Well, thankfully, this is the Muppet Babies version of the game. So, no, it ain't going to affect you at all. If you didn't play the games, you're not going to care. How's that? There's your answer.
All right.
Short and sweet on that. It is definitely a movie that still somewhat respects the games, but also kind of doesn't really at all. It's amazing, kind of. It's a weird conundrum.
That's actually kind of great.
This is not selling. I don't know if this is selling me on it or not.
No, here's how I would put it. Okay, so if you played the video games, which I have, then you probably were worried this whole time about going to see Tom Holland play Nathan Drake, because in the game, for people that don't know, Nathan Drake is roughly like late 30s, early 40s. Think Bradley Cooper. Nathan Fillion is who originally people always think of for this role. There's actually a great fan film of Nathan Fillion out there playing Nathan
Which
Drake.
Which is awesome.
It's a great fan film. He does a great job. That's really the character. They decided to, you know, the whole thing launched because Tom Holland went to Sony and pitched doing a young James Bond movie. They laughed him out of the office and they said, but we also have Uncharted and he he's a fan of the game. So here we are. It's kind of, go look it up. It's a fun story. But this isn't really Nathan Drake. I mean, the character that I've played, but if you're watching the movie and you've never played the games, I don't think it's going to make a difference because it's still a fun movie. That's really what matters, right? Like that's the big thing that I often think filmmakers don't pay any attention to is make a good movie first, you know, get the story, borrow from the game, pay homage to it, take what you need from it, but you're never going to duplicate a 12-hour or 20-hour story element because you only have 2 hours to do it. So take the best components from the game and make a good movie. That's the trick. That's what you got to do. And I think for the most part, I feel like they did that here. Somewhat.
All right. So I checked that.
Somewhat. Because Tom Holland is very, he comes close to Nathan Drake by the end. Mark Wahlberg is never, ever Sully from the game, but I still like Mark Wahlberg. And I think as he plays himself, basically, he did a good job. It's easy to do that.
Right. It's easy to play yourself. Yeah. All right. So some of the critics about when it comes to this movie that I've read have found it to be they're very nonplus in their opinions mm-hmm. to it. It didn't really affect them really negatively or positively. It didn't seem to really resonate. However, reading your review on the HollywoodOutsider.com, plug.
Cheap plug. I like it. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So reading your review, I found that you seem to overall, though you had your issues with it, enjoyed the movie. Mm-hmm. Why would you think that some of these other critics might have not enjoyed it nearly as much as you did? What kind of things do you think they might have missed about it?
I read several of the negative reviews. A lot of them kept comparing it to Indiana Jones. I mean, I guess it's fair. They pay respects to Indiana Jones. The lame-ass line. Nuns! Why did it have to be nuns? That was just bad, bad. Connection, but I mean, at least they made the connection, I guess. And it felt like I read like five. And this is after, I always read them after I write my own review because I don't want to influence what I write. You know what I mean? That's just how I am. But when I read them, I'm just like, that wasn't the movie. Like everything they're talking about, they're complaining about, it wasn't the movie. Oh, it's not inspired. And they need to do more swashbuckling. They need to do more this, more. And like, that's not the movie that you got. So why I don't know. So I felt like a lot of what I read anyway, just the ones I read, were people that had expectations or wanted different things than what they were given. The ones that were positive that I read were very much in line with mine. Like they just, you know, take your knowledge of the game out of it. Cause some of the negatives were game lovers that felt like they wanted their Uncharted movie. And hey, I understand that to a degree. I do. But most of the positive ones like mine were just people, let's just go and enjoy the movie. And my audience loved it. They were having a great time. So to me, I feel like oftentimes when it comes to blockbuster entertainment, my fellow critics often, I feel like miss the window on the fun factor. The movie's fun. There are definitely issues with it. I think Ruben Fleischer does a nice job with creating the film, with staging some cool set pieces. I think there are some editing issues where I don't think the action is always very inspired. There's not as many memorable moments as I would like, because I really feel like Uncharted is full of memorable moments. The games are. They're very epic in that respect. And actually, the airplane scene that you've probably seen in trailers, that's directly lifted from Uncharted 3. So it's kind of weird that it's in here, because that happens way years later after this story would be taking place, but whatever. It's odd to me that people can't just try to find a way to have fun with it. There's a lot of good here. There's a lot of great here. There is some stuff that definitely needs improvement. I feel like by the end of the movie, you're at a place where, okay, they have the chemistry that they need to make the real Nathan Drake and Sully movie that I kind of want to see. You know, there's a lot of good the casting is fantastic across the board. Tom Holland surprised the hell out of me. He's not really Nathan Drake, but he gets as close as I need him to get to. And he plays a completely different character than Peter Parker. He's very confident. He's very sleek. He's fun. You know, I just really, the writing needs to be sharper, not as witty retorts that I would, I mean, because the wit in the games is great. Here, it's not as strong. Make that sharper, get a little better with the action in terms of set pieces and how you shoot it, quick. Quit editing the crap out of it. Let an action piece flow. And I think you'll have a great movie the next time. Sorry, I went on a long tirade there.
No, that's great. You almost wiped out my second question, but I'm going to try it anyway. My third question.
Shoot.
So, but I'm going to try it anyway. So, you know, I wanted to find out about the movie when it came to these set pieces that are in there. Did you find that you were more impressed by something that was brand new because of the movie, or did you were you more impressed with a set piece that came out of the video game?
I was really impressed for the most part with the plane scene that comes directly out of Uncharted 3, because, you know, a lot of that is of course CGI and whatnot, but I think they staged it really well. And if you go watch the making of it, I am really impressed with Tom Holland, because he did a lot of that stuff where he's jumping from crate to crate. And that was really impressive. When you see actually seeing him make it was more impressive than actually watching it, which is just weird. But it's a fun scene. They really kind of bring it to life. It's very similar to how it plays in the game, which is great. There's a fun little heist sequence, you know, early in the film, which I think is done very, very well. The end scene where you have basically I don't want to spoil it, but they basically have pirate ships, dueling pirate ships in the air. That's how I'll word it. And it's cool. I mean, it's ridiculous. It makes no sense, but it's kind of cool. Again, if you would have had a little bit better editing and a better script writing, I think that scene would have been epic and extremely memorable. Instead, it's just kind of fun.
Did you just say dueling flying pirate ships?
Yes, I'm not making that up. It's dueling flying pirate ships. It's actually kind of cool, but it could have been better. And as you're watching, you're like, oh, this could have been amazing. This was almost amazing. Didn't quite get there, but almost.
I feel like I missed out on something now. Well, all right. So what's your final score, Aaron?
My final score is 650. And that has more to do with it wasn't as inspired as I would have expected, as I would have hoped. Because it is based off a video game, and I kind of would have – that's not a bad score, though. 650 is like 3 stars out of 5. That's good. It's a fun movie. It's a good family flick. Like I said, good casting. I do want to mention that Chloe Frazier, who's the character straight out of the games, is played by Sophia Ali. She's pitch perfect if you played the game. Like, she is Chloe 100%. Tati Gabrielle plays Braddock. You've seen her on You. She was in You, the most latest season of You. She's the librarian, and she's fantastic. I thought she was just wonderful. So, I mean, there's some great casting. There's a lot of good here. And I think Tom Holland really, by the end, kind of grew into the part. But for the first half, it takes a little bit to really believe he is the character he is. But he gets there by the end. So 650 gives me a lot of, especially now that it's taken off at the box office, it really gives me a lot of hope for what the next one could bring.
All right. Very cool.
Okay. Any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about? I basically already told you everything I saw. I spent ten minutes on it. So what do you guys got? Anything?
Well, this week was the last week that the last three episodes of Legend of Vox Machina came out. And I have mentioned how much I enjoyed it earlier, but I'm going to just mention it again just because it fits right here. That is a fantastic cartoon. If you enjoy cartoons, it's a fantastic piece of art. If you enjoy art, just because of the way that you imagine they built this story, which for those who don't know, they built this story by a bunch of friends getting together and playing Dungeons and Dragons and parsed together one of their campaigns into this first season of the show. The characters are fun and just so different from anything else you've ever seen. It's very much like watching your friends play Dungeons and Dragons and being morons, and I loved it. Then, speaking of morons that I love, we did say that this is the last week of season one of Peacemaker. It did drop this week, and woof, that final episode of the season was fantastic, and I love that show. It's probably one of my favorite pieces of television for the year. I know it's a little early to call it, but
it's February, man.
It's right up there. I know.
Okay.
I started watching Marvelous Mrs. Maisel for the new season that came out. I rewatched season 3 to prepare for the new episodes that are released. They're actually doing a weekly release. They dropped the first two, and then it'll be weekly after that. So I would highly encourage you to check out the show if you haven't seen it before. Everybody in the cast is phenomenal. It's so funny. It's a show where you can pay attention, but like you don't have to focus on every detail, which is really nice to unengage your brain a little bit and to feel, I don't know, like a weight off your shoulders. I feel like I'm always watching so much dark content and dour stuff that having something a little bit lighter and funnier, you know, with some dramatic pieces or whatever in the story, but overall just really entertaining. It's nice and refreshing. And Rachel Brosnahan is incredible in her role. I love her.
You know where I first saw her? The Blacklist. True story.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. She was on the Blacklist for a little bit. She dies. That's cool. Shh. She's not on there anymore, in case you didn't know.
You spoiled it.
I know. I did also watch, I've been watching Titans, and I'm going to to echo, you know, my son watches this, and I asked him what he thought when I started watching it, and he said pretty much exactly what I'm going to quote. It's the most terrible show ever, but I love it. So there you
that
go.
That sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty accurate.
Like, it's really bad. But I somehow can't stop watching it. All right. So let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Why can't video game movie adaptations get it right? That's the question we're talking about. It's a very open discussion. We haven't talked about really video game movies in a few years because Scott Clark left this podcast. And you know when he
and it was banned. It was banned content for a few years after
kind of.
His departure.
I mean, when you mention it every episode, I mean, at some point you got to move on. But yeah, so we're bringing it back, and we're trying to bring the sexy back to the video game conversation. But
and without him,
don't say that. He's got his own podcast. Go listen to The Gaming Outsider if you're a big gamer. But we're gonna dive back into this topic. So it's a pretty easy and open discussion I want to have. But video games don't connect 9 times out of 10. I think that's a fair statement. Would you guys agree that's a fair statement?
Yes, that's a very fair statement.
Okay. Hell yes.
So
I would almost say 9.5 out of 10.
Wow, so half of one movie did really well. I mean, and I think the question is, you know, why? Because they have fantastic stories oftentimes. I mean, people rave about the stories video games tell these days. Fleshed out world. Very engaging characters because people... You know, I feel like there's almost more memorable characters coming out of video games than movies these days, because a lot of movies are just regurgitating IP sequels and all that other stuff. Like, video games are trying new worlds. They have tried to adapt them for movies for many, 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 many years. And movies, keep in mind, they've adapted novels, poems, songs, concepts, haikus, you know, so why can't Hollywood get the translation for video games right? That's the question.
This comes down to, like, the way I'm going to answer this question is, at least to me, is going to be the same way I answered the question when it came to comic book movies. Comic book movies didn't really start landing until people started taking them much, or fans of comic book movies started taking them much more serious and were producing their own product. That's when we started seeing this, like, real crunk. Like climb in comic book movies. And the same thing has to happen in video games. You have to have a person who is very careful and very engaged with the property, start developing a story that is tellable in an, you know, however long the movie is going to be, but also not hold, you know, not like Marvel did this is great way. It took the Marvel history and told it just a little bit different, a little bit more grounded, and it was easy to get in there and for new people to engage with that. For video games, same sort of thing needs to happen, and I have ideas as to how it's already starting to be done. And it sounds like Uncharted is one of these movies that takes the property and says, we love the property. We're going to treat everything with respect. We're going to tell a little bit of our own story, but add some flavor to it from the games.
A huge thing of it, I feel like, is the lack of good directors at the helm of them, because Hollywood just doesn't care about video games. They don't respect the
I feel like you're
medium.
Shouting at Uwe Boll right now. You're like, hey, Boll, you listening to this?
You son of a...
Well, okay, so first let me say this. Okay. I know that Resident Evil is not a good adaptation of the video game. I'm fully aware of that. But I do enjoy the first film. I recognize it's not an amazing movie, but I love it personally. However, the fact that they passed on George Romero, who is a prolific horror filmmaker, and rejected his screenplay for Resident Evil is just baffling to me. And it's, I think it goes down to them not having any respect for this type of medium. It's just like, let's just throw something together. Another component to it is they wait too long. They wait so long after a game has been released and it's been popularized to put something together and try to recapture some of that magic. And when they do manage to get the money, get Hollywood on board, find a director, they fail to, it's similar to the book adaptation issue where it's like you are trying either too hard to incorporate every element of the story or you're not trying hard enough to stay to the source material. Like there's not a good enough writer and director. There's very, very few, I should say, writers and directors who can balance that line, who have enough experience with video games, which seems crazy to me, to be able to adapt that in the right way. Because it does take not just a filmmaker, it takes somebody who understands video games, because that alone is a film in its own way. I mean, if we really think about it, video games are basically their own movie.
They are. They have their own story. I mean, that's the funny part is so much of it could be just borrowed from the game and you'd have most of your story right there. I mean, you have the clever lines, you have the set pieces, you have all this stuff. I don't understand why
all the characters are developed and built in their relationships, the rapport. Like, I mean, so much of it is already there for you.
It boggles my mind sometimes. I mean, there are some that I think really come close. I mean, I dug Hitman with Timothy Oliphant, even though I didn't understand why he was Hitman, because but it's a game I loved, and I thought, well, the adaptation's not so bad. But most of what I've seen is not good. I mean, Resident Evil, like you said, that's nothing like the games. Nothing. I don't think any Resident Evil fan has really ever got close to the games from any of that. Most recent one I heard was just awful. I never even bothered, but I heard it was awful.
I started the first 20 minutes of that and I had to bail because the dialogue was terrible.
That Raccoon City, Welcome to Raccoon City, that one? Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Silent Hill, that was one that kind of, you know, there have been ones that connected with people. I still think Warcraft was a better adaptation than most people give it credit for.
I think so too.
But most of the time, I feel like studios do weird things because they obviously, I think, I don't remember which one of you said it. Maybe it was John, but they're not fans of the property. They just want to make money.
Right.
They just want to make money.
Right.
So they just want to make this thing happen. Remember when Tomb Raider came out, the first version, where they had to, Angelina Jolie is cast. She's already very shapely. And at that time, you know, she wasn't like Skeletor. She was very shapely and, you know, she filled out a suit just fine, but they had to amplify her bosoms because they wanted to make it closer to what the game had. And I'm just like, nobody cares. This is the
game had
weirdest
triangle
thing.
Boobs. What are you talking about?
It was so weird. And I'm like, I get that you want 14-year-old boys to show up, but trust me, she looks great on her own. You don't need to do that. But some studio execs like, well, we got to make her boobs bigger. That'll sell this movie. What are you talking about? That's not going to, when has that ever sold a movie? Especially in this day and age, you can Google it.
Well, Michael Bay, I mean, it has sold some of his movies.
I think, you know, the explosions kind of outweigh the breast size in most of his films, but I concede that you have a point, you know, but for you go back and I think Super Mario Brothers might've been one of the first. I mean, it wasn't the first because they had the wizard and stuff like that. But, you know, it's definitely one of the earlier games that I can remember, movies that I can remember. And it's like they didn't take anything from the game really except the names and the likenesses and then just like made this awful thing. And most, I mean, Street Fighter, my God, Van Damme, you can't even understand what the hell he's saying. Like all these different movies that have come out really just can't seem to grasp how to make a good movie first. And I think that is the number one concern is they don't have fans of the games making the movies. And I feel like the older we get, we're going to get more of it because you have more of a generation that grew up playing them versus had kids that played them. So they're popular. Right. We'll make money off this thing. Do you remember going in? I mean, I mean, Amanda, you talked about Resident Evil. Was that a game you played or you just went to see it because you liked Mila Jovovich?
Yeah, I played the game. I definitely went for Michelle Rodriguez and Mila Jovovich because I thought that, well, I'm also really just drawn to lead female badasses in general.
But why?
I wonder where that comes from, Buffy.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like that was the initial draw for me, because when I played the game, it was like here and there. It wasn't anything where I was like a well-devoted fan to the entire franchise of games. And I would say the one that I was most excited for, like if we want to talk about that,
was most excited
Assassin's
for?
Creed. Oh, I love those games. Like those are my favorite games. And I was so excited, also super nervous because, again, as this entire topic is talking about, video game adaptations have a horrible reputation. And that was another disappointment in my life. Like, I just remember being so irritated that they got me excited. And Michael Fassbender was great, but they just flunked the whole film.
That movie
made me so mad.
Half of that movie was great. I loved all the stuff right? in the past. Like, all the parkour and all that stuff in the past. That stuff was great. I'm like, make that movie. What are you doing trying to be clever? You're not, obviously. Make that movie. Somebody had to watch a freaking
daily.
They're
trying to do too much. Like, that's what it felt like. Yeah. Somebody who is inexperienced and doesn't understand what they're doing is trying to do too much instead of just giving, just give us a good video game movie for once, for crying out loud. Prince of Persia got it right.
Did they?
Ish.
Did they?
I liked it.
Ish.
You know what's funny is I like that movie, but it's really bad casting, because not because he was bad in the movie, but he's not Persian. Even a little. And I'm just like, if they made that today, poor Jake Gyllenhaal. Can you imagine how much he would be trashed? Like, he's just an actor taking a job. I don't blame him. But I remember when they came out, Prince of Persia is one of, I think, my favorite game of all time. So I was so stoked for that movie. And I enjoyed the movie, but the whole time I'm like, he doesn't really look Persian. I mean, are we just not going to acknowledge that this isn't really a Persian dude? I mean, we just don't care
at
all.
Him and Gemma, nowhere near being Persian. Nope.
It was really kind of weird. And that wasn't long ago. That's the funny part, is it feels like it was 30 years ago or something, but it was only like a decade ago that movie came out.
Yep.
Cancel culture is coming for him, though, so this may be getting brought up in the near future.
Oh, of course. Why? What did he do now? Because he's on a Taylor Swift song or something?
No, he did actually finally respond to Taylor Swift, but there was another... a woman who came out who worked technically for him, and there were some inappropriate happenings.
You know what? Unless there's criminal charges, you're not going to make me not be a fan of Jake Gyllenhaal. I'm sorry. I think he's a great actor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hey, if something bad happened, let me know and I'll adjust my opinion. But as of right now, other than the fact that he's not Persian, I'm going to watch his stuff.
Right. So when I think about video game movies, I actually like, there's a couple of them that I think about, the ones that I think are great. One of them is a TV show, and so that's cheating. But
not really. I mean, it's an adaptation. Like Silent Hill. You can talk about it.
Yeah, it's an adaptation, and it's a really good one. But Silent Hill, you mentioned, and that was that turned out to be a very good horror flick, and it had nothing to, you know, sure, it had something to do with the video game. I didn't play the video game, but I loved that movie.
It's a good movie.
It was fun. Yeah. It is a very good movie. I think of The Last Starfighter. It makes up a video game to build a movie around, and I think it does that effectively. Mm-hmm. And it does tell you that there's an ability to actually tell a good story that involves video games if you find an effective way to do it. And then, like, I think about Detective Pikachu is based off the whole Pikachu, Pokemon thing. Detective Pikachu, great movie, has nothing to do with the video games, but they treated the characters with a reverence and a respect that makes it a good movie. Also, I think about Sonic the Hedgehog, another great movie, and when they treated it with respect.
I think great might be an overstatement, but I don't.
It was fun.
I would go with entertaining.
Entertaining.
But great,
it was a fun,
stretch.
Entertaining movie. Like, when I'm saying great when it comes to these things, I'm saying I don't feel like I wasted my time sitting
there
down and watching.
Understood.
It. Right. You know, I really had a good time. I can reflect on that good time. I can't wait to see Sonic 2, because Sonic was my favorite video game to play when I was younger. And then finally, Arcane, which is on Netflix, is something that is based off of League of Legends, which all League of Legends really is a tower defense video game where you have the all these different characters you jump in on and you play these characters. And there's no real story to it because the story is kick the crap out of the other team. That's it. Okay. And they turn some of these characters and give them a backstory and give them and just a beautiful setting and a beautiful full story to play with. And you have something that was created by the creators of the video game that is just a beautiful, thought out, incredible story, all done in with, again, a reverence because it's their property. Like that's where I come in with the idea that as long as people start respecting these properties like it's their own, you'll start seeing more good quality films like this.
I mean, I feel like we've gotten some better ones over the past 5 or 10 years because of that. I mean, I liked Need for Speed. I don't care if it wasn't a hit or not, but I liked Need for Speed. I thought that was a fun movie. You know, I'll talk about Tomb Raider in a minute. And then, you know, Sonic, I agree. People really liked it. Mortal Kombat, people really dug that. I mean, there, Werewolves Within.
I was going to say that one.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good, better ones coming out, but there's so much garbage. And it's just, and I know it's hard for, you know, video game fans because they get really kind of defeated with it. And I get that because I'm a comic book fan and I had that same feeling for decades. So I totally understand. For every Superman and Batman in the 80s, most of what came out of comic book movies were hot garbage, were Dolph Lundgren as the Punisher shit, you know, just bad. And granted, it had Lou Gossett Jr., so that's not all bad, but man, that's just garbage. So I understand where video game fans are coming from because they feel like they live in these worlds where these stories are being told, and why can't studios make the movies and respect the stories that are actually being told, because they don't have to do a whole lot to bring that story to life. It's literally there. It's just about putting it into a written form, you know, I mean, or bringing it or truncating it, making it smaller, maybe making a TV series. Like you mentioned, I mean, Last of Us is going to be a TV show, which it should be. It's a very well thought out storyline. I think, you know, 8 or 10 episodes will definitely give that world much more of a vision than you would ever get doing a 2-hour movie. So, I mean, Maybe that's the medium it more belongs in because these stories are so long and expansive.
Yeah, that's also very true. When it comes to, you know, you have a question coming up here that, you know, that what would we have be created into a piece of property that we can watch coming up? You know, what would we choose as far as a video game to turn into a movie or a TV show or something? And the idea that I come up with is one of my favorite games playing way back when was Command and Conquer, both Red Alert and Tiberian Sun, where you have like a World War II theme one and you have a more futuristic war theme thing where, and each one of them has special characters that you can turn into something. But this, just this whole idea of like these wars being fought by these characters and planning it out would be a fun idea for a TV show, I think.
I like how you just skipped ahead. Like, I'm ready to move on. Like, I was going to move to your next.
What? I was just trying to have a conversation.
Is there anything before we move on to another question? Is there anything they should do different when adapting, other than having, you know, more fan related writers involved, you know, people that actually understand what the games are? Do you feel like there's more they need to do? Do you think they need to have these extravagant budgets and go for blockbuster every time? Because I feel like there's a lot of games that could really work as smaller films that have the brand recognition that, I mean, you know, like It Takes Two is a very small, very, very kind of, it could be a great animated film. You know, I think that would be a beautiful, I know they're talking about adapting it, but that would be a beautiful animated film, or maybe something special effects heavy. You know, you have Ghost of Tsushima, I think would be just a fantastic movie to watch.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of stories that I would love to be told. And I think maybe a TV show is the better way to go in this, for this particular medium, because the stories are so expansive. But is there anything else you think they should do when they're adapting these? Like anything different than that, what versus what they're doing now?
For me personally, and I'm just going to say this briefly, and then we can move on.
Okay.
If we're going to put women in the center, which we should have them as a focal point, especially if the story is about them, can we give them realistic outfits and like realistic appearances? It's just so wild to me when I see some of the outfits that they've put these characters in, and I'm like, There's even Lara Croft. There's no way in hell a woman is going to go through the jungle in a crop top and like sandals or something. You know, she's not going to wear that. She might wear the shorts, but I promise you she's not going to look cute. Her hair is going to be a mess. I don't know. I always find that really bizarre. It's the same thing in horror movies where women are always running in high heels. And I'm like, they would take their shoes off. We're not that dumb.
I mean, I've met a few that might leave them on. I'm just, I'm saying, I'm not judging. I'm just, you know, I've been a couple.
I do think I prefer
the TV format, though. I think the over-sexualization thing, that is definitely, you have not, I feel like video games have kind of evolved in that respect, but movie adaptations are slow to catch on.
Yeah, a little bit. But I do like the TV format, like the one that I would like to see come to the screen. And I'll be honest, I've never played this game. I've heard of it endlessly, so I feel like I do know parts of it. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it would be interesting. And this comes from Zach Parkerson from The Gaming Outsider, who's been a guest on our podcast before. But Nier. So this is probably one of his favorite games of all time. And it's about this character, this protagonist, who's searching for a cure for his daughter, who's infected with the Black Scrawl virus, which is seemingly incurable. I think that would be really fun as a television show, whether it were animated or live action. I feel like that could be up for debate, but
that one
sounds like it'd be fun.
We're getting more TV shows. I mean, we're getting Halo's coming out soon. Hopefully you and I can catch it at South by. What? And
yes.
And then Last of Us, like I already talked about. So more and more are doing that. And since apparently everybody else is jumping ahead, I'm going to go Gears of War. That's the movie I want to see made at some point.
Of course.
And I freaking love that series. It's so stupidly macho that it's ridiculous, which is why I want Dave Bautista, Jason Momoa, John Cena.
Oh my God.
And The Rock all in the same movie. I want them all in it. I want just so much.
I think that's the only way to do it with any sort of reverence.
Oh my God. I want all the swagger that's available right now. I want every swagger in one movie. So that's what I want.
That's
Dave Bautista,
awesome.
Jason Momoa, John Cena, and The Rock. You guys come together, make Gears of War. I will be there. I will be there. I promise.
So would most of the women in the world.
And men.
And men.
Let's be honest. Yeah. We all kind of want to sleep with them. So whatever it is. Or be there.
I just want to be held.
Okay. So now we got that top. You can take that question off your formats, guys, because apparently you guys are just jumping the guns. But let's go to the next question. What is your best example of a movie getting a video game adaptation right and why?
I'll keep my thought succinct because I think it's the same one you have, Aaron, and it's Tomb Raider. I loved the game, and I'm talking about the newer one. We're not talking about Lara Croft's Tomb Raider.
The game reboot. Yep.
It followed the game so closely. The character felt so realized. I loved the adventure. It felt like, this is the worst analogy ever, and I'm going to yell at myself later for making a comment that's kind of sexist, but it is the female version of Indiana Jones in some respects. And it gives that to us, meaning women, something that we haven't had before in the same respect. And she was, I don't know, I didn't feel like she was over-sexualized. I felt like she was just a badass trying to do what she was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And it was very realistic. It felt very grounded. And it didn't feel like I'm watching a movie that was adapted from a video game. It just felt like I'm watching a movie, which is ultimately what we want. We want to feel like we're not constantly comparing or looking at what's being missed or, you know, different things like that. You want to just feel like you're watching a movie and you're immersed in it. And that's how I felt watching it. I loved it.
Yeah, I would, since you already brought it up, I'll roll with that. And, you know, I would love to say Werewolves Within, but I haven't played the game, so I can't speak to the adaptation part of it. But in terms of Tomb Raider, you know, it does everything I wanted a video game adaptation to do. It is completely respectful of the source material without ever being disrespectful. And that's important. I mean, there's Uncharted, I thought was a good movie. There's a cameo in it, and I won't give it away, but it's one of those where, you know, fans are going to get it, but it's so forced, it kind of takes you out of the movie. This doesn't have any of that. Like, nothing took me out of Tomb Raider. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed it. I wish it would have been a much bigger hit than it was, but I think they're still making a sequel. I mean, obviously, Walton Goggins helps. That helps everything, right? Makes everything better. But that was a movie where I loved those games. And it's because they got back to the core of who Lara Croft is versus who, I don't know, some 14-year-old boy wants her to be, I guess. You know, it's not an over-sexualized character. I don't think that's sexist, man. I think that's an accurate representation of, you know, what women would like to see. There's nothing wrong with wanting to see that. And it wasn't like they made Indiana Jones a woman. They gave you your own version of it. That's, I think, the best way to do stuff like that. Give women their own hero. They deserve it. So why not? And Lara Croft is that. Stop making her boobs bigger. Nobody gives a shit. Make her a tough badass like she is, very intelligent, can figure puzzles out, very self-reliant. You know, those are the qualities that made her a great character, which in turn's made for a great movie. And it's definitely my favorite video game adaptation by a mile. Honestly, I don't even know what would be close. Doom is so close. But, you know, just kidding. That movie sucked.
I keep forgetting about Doom. God. Which it is. It is a pretty great video game adaptation as far as how much it keeps it to feeling of Doom, especially that last bit they do.
I just re-listened because, you know, for the Hollywood Outsider Presents Bad Movie Night, which were released on its own feed, which are, you know, the older episodes of Bad Movie Night from Patreon. Doom's one of them, right? Doom's one of them. So I had to listen to that. Uh-huh. And I had to listen, and it's on the feed now. So if anyone wants to go listen, it's out there. The Hollywood Outsider Presents Bad Movie Night. And John likes Doom. And I was listening to it going, I still can't understand. I still to this day can't understand how you think that's a good movie. But you genuinely like that film.
Yeah. Even like one of the things that I love so much about it is that this is the first time that The Rock is given a chance to be an actor and he's bad at it. He is. Like, his whole acting persona is so small in this movie. So I like it for some of the wrong reasons and some of the right reasons. Like, it's got this cheesy story, but it's enjoyable. And it really, like, there's a lot of these things where I'm watching the movie. I'm like, I've been in that. I've been there. I shot that thing. I've been there. Oh, that's where Pinky comes from. Oh, that makes sense. You know, I really did just appreciate it. So, but I wouldn't say it's a good movie, but I like it.
Fair enough. So what is your best example of a movie getting a video game adaptation right and why?
Well, because I was trying to jump ahead, I've already mentioned it, which is Arcane. Arcane is something that took the ideas of a video game that has no real backstory beyond beating the crap out of each other and made me not only care, but like almost tear up at all these sweet, strong, and powerful moments that they developed in this show on Netflix. And it's based off of League of Legends. And for those who don't know what Arcane is or League of Legends is, it's just a tower defense game. And I went into it just as somebody who used to play the game, who stopped a long time ago because it has such a toxic feel to the community that plays that game. But I really just, it made me want to play the game again. And I really engaged with those characters. And I really just wanted to want more of that right away. Like, it takes the idea of the video game and says, we don't care. And we are going to tell you a story. And it does exactly that.
Okay. Well, we're going to move on to some listener comments. Great thoughts, everybody. That was a great conversation. Thanks, everybody, obviously, for being here. And I kind of want to share some of their thoughts. They're interesting. Brian Lowry says they want to change the story. We asked listeners, what do you think most filmmakers miss when adapting video games to film? Brian Lowry said they want to change the story from the game, which makes the gamers mad. Stick to the story, and gamers complain that it wasn't original enough. So basically he's saying you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, very much so.
You just can't please us fans, man. There's some interesting thoughts here. Michael James Rook said realism. Everyone feels this need to turn even silly games like Super Mario as deadly serious, but then pivot halfway and add silly elements. Stop. Appreciate the tone of the game and keep it in mind when designing a movie.
That's a good point. In a lot of games, they do have moments where they change the genre, and sometimes it's based on what your character's doing. But for a film, I don't think that is translated as well. You have to be very particular in how you do that. Mm-hmm. If you're going to throw in multiple types of tones and genre.
Andreas said something interesting. Uncharted, for example, is a game inspired by Indiana Jones and other adventure movies. And what makes it great is the fact that you play it. If you turn it into a movie, it's just another adventure movie. I'd call Silent Hill a good example of how to succeed because they took the setting and some of the story, the key story points, and made a solid horror movie. So what he's saying is a lot of the advantage to a game is that you're playing it, so it's very interactive, and you never have that element in a movie, so it's hard to connect the two for a lot of filmmakers.
I think that's where
I agree with that.
Television shows can add some value, especially if they add in an interactive component, like they've done for some other shows.
Sure.
I can't think of the name of it right now, but if they add that element in, it'll kind of be like you're still able to participate in the game in some way.
Black Mirror.
Yeah. Yeah, they did it. A couple of shows have done it, which has worked out really well and people really engaged with it. So even if they were to, Aaron, you're going to have to remind me the name of the franchise of games. It's a horror series that it's based, what happens is based on your decisions.
Oh, the Dark Pictures anthologies or whatever they are.
If they made those into an interactive movie or something, how fun would that be?
I mean, those are really fun games.
They are. They're kind of, they're already kind of like a movie, but.
Yeah, those are really fun. They are interactive because it is, it's very much like a movie. You make choices and your choices affect what happens. It plays like a movie, but you're still interactive. I mean, I dig it. All right, guys, that was a really good topic. And now we're going to do something weird because that's what we do. But first, we got to share some thoughts on this episode or anything else. Be sure to tell us in our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. And again, please rate us and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. Don't forget, The Hollywood Outsider Presents Bad Movie Night is also out. If you want to check out some of our older episodes, subscribe to Patreon. You get the new ones. And the ones on Patreon are always unedited. We do have to edit some of the ones in the feed for because some of the risque stuff that gets talked about. You can also find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at @RJohnDraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This. Is Veronica's Marshmallows ever going to finish, by the way? Is that ever going to?
I mean, eventually.
That's funny. Troy on The Blacklist Exposed and Beyond Westworld and at Troy Heinrichs, and he'll be back next week. And me on The Blacklist Exposed with Troy and presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. Now, before we get to our interview with Greg Girard from the Beloit International Film Festival, we're playing a game. It's called How Do You Survive? We played this before, but we've got Batman coming out. It's going to be like the biggest release in a long time. It's going to be huge. So we're going to play a game of How Do You Survive Batman Edition. I'm going to describe two random scenarios, and these two guys plus me are going to offer their solution for how best they would survive. Now, in both of these scenarios, we're the villains. Got it?
Got it.
Yep, I'm on board.
Okay, so here's the first one. You have just implemented your master plan to dispense nerve gas throughout Gotham City. You're making your escape in a helicopter when Batman shoots his bat grapple. I don't know if that's the official term. On the helicopter rails.
It is.
And now you're in trouble. How do you survive?
Well, this is easy because I obviously know all of the tools that Batman is going to be trying to use against me. I'm in Gotham City. So I'm going to have my tools at the ready to counter whatever tools he has, weapons and such. So I'm going to pull out my wire cutters. And I'm going to snip, snip,
God
snip.
God damn it.
We all want to murder Batman.
Hey, I'm not saying I want to murder him, but I don't want to die. So
there you go.
It's you or me, baby. It's you or me.
John.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to get creative because that was my idea. What I'm going to do is as soon as I know that Batman's on his way up with the bat grapple, I'm going to jump out the other side of the helicopter and just do the timing just right so that I can take my cord down to one of the tops of the buildings, because I have a mask and I have a breathing apparatus and I know where, you know, what's going on because I did it all and I'm trying to now survive my own folly. I'm going to jump out, with my zip cord and go to the top of the first building I can get to, drop down to it as he's going up in the helicopter. And that way we never see each other and I'm gone.
Okay, Amanda's winning so far. So I'm going to have to segue too because I literally had kind of the same point. So Amanda, you got there first. Good for you. And
for putting my name first. Yeah, I like it.
There you go. We would all just cut the cord. Why don't the villains ever cut this damn cord? That's what I don't understand. They're all so genius. They can't think to cut the stupid cable. So I guess what I would do and to come up with something different is I would already have a parachute on the helicopter and I would have the helicopter rigged with C4. Because I'm sick of this sumbitch always ruining my good time. As soon as he got to the helicopter, I dive out and blow the helicopter up.
There you go. I like it.
My movie, Batman Dies. Okay, so the next scenario. You've taken over Arkham Asylum. The only problem is you need to get outside to escape. And in your way are three distinct paths. One with Joker, one with Bane, and one with Batman. They all want a piece of you because, you know, you're a shady son of a bitch. How do you survive? So,
which Bane are we talking about?
Bane. Which, are there more than one Bane? I don't understand.
There's two different versions of Bane. There's
Jesus, you freaking people. The one in the Dark Knight Returns, or the Dark.
Okay, yeah, so it's Rises. Not the other one. Rises, it's just a big dummy then.
It's like what?
It's not the big dummy that works for
Poison Ivy?
Poison Ivy.
No. Oh, God. No, from Batman and Robin? Ugh, no. Dark Knight Rises, Bane. Okay. That guy. So I'm going to take the path with Joker because I feel like Batman always finds a way to beat villains. I don't want to go that way. Bane is really kind of mean, and he can beat the shit out of me. I don't think that sounds like a good path. Joker, can we like just be honest and admit that Joker has zero superpowers? Like, he is really just a mentally challenged person who really gets hung up on clown makeup. I think I could beat the shit out of him. I think I feel like it's not fair because you shouldn't hurt people that are mentally challenged. But in the same token, I got to get out. I got to leave. I got to escape.
Right.
So, you know, he's in the way and I'm going to beat the shit out of him. I'm going to smear his makeup when I do it, too.
All right. I'm going to, and I don't know like what the visual setup is of this
path. It's your visual.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go down. I'm going to say that these all kind of connect. So I'm going to get Batman to notice me and I'm going to turn around and I'm going to head towards Joker because the two of them are always going to want to go against each other. Mm. They always care more about each other and fighting each other. That will be the distraction for me. And how I will start the, I'll instigate the fight between the two of them is I'll tell Joker, I'll mess with his ego because that's his weakness. And I'm going to tell him that Batman doesn't even care about fighting him anymore. He just wants to fight me. So nah. And then he's going to get all pissed off and he's going to want to fight Batman and be like, why don't you want to fight me? And get in his feelings. And so then he's going to get in the way and then I get to just run off.
I love your scenario. I really feel like you should have done. So No.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good. Missed opportunity. Damn it.
Well, so my three paths. I'm in this hallway. There's the three directions in this hallway. To my left, I have Joker. Directly in front of me, I have Bane. And then to my right, I have Batman. They're all heading towards me at the same time. And what I'm going to do is jump up into the ceiling and alien my way, aliens my way through over them so that I can get away from them all.
So you're going to crawl through the ceiling like Spider-Man?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
John, how just are you getting up there?
He's
are
inventing
you just, you're just jumping?
Apparently, you just leap up and then you can just alien your way out of there.
What? Are you a frog?
I'm sorry, but if Batman and Joker and Bane can do that, you better believe I can.
Okay. I didn't know you had such good leaping abilities, that's all.
Apparently, he just gets right up there.
I know, I'm tall.
Do you have a bat
grapple? I can probably just, I'm not expecting Bane to be much because Bane's, you know, he's been locked up in a padded cell for such a long time. What is he going to do?
That's what he's roided out still.
Push-ups?
Yeah.
You know, you don't keep taking those roids. You kind of deflate a little bit.
You can always.
You know they're going to hear you crawling above them, right? So like as you're crawling.
It doesn't matter. By the time they get to the middle of the hallway, they're going to look at each other and then just start beating the shit out of each other. What do they need me for?
You can always count on John when here's a scenario and you got three options. John's like, I got four.
There's only three buttons here. No, there's four buttons here. I made a fourth button. Yeah.
When in doubt, make it out.
Make it out.
That's going to do it for our regular show. So here is where I bid adieu to Amanda and John as we're going to cross into our interview with the director of the Bloit International Film Festival. Do you want to say anything in closing?
Bye.
Check out the Bloit International Film Festival. You're going to hear all about it, but it's a great festival. It is, there's going to be a smaller virtual component, so definitely check it out. It's worth your time.
There you go. So now let's get into the interview with the director of the Beloit International Film Festival taking place February 25th to March 6th. More info is always at beloitfilmfest.org. That's in Beloit, Wisconsin. And here is Greg Girard. How do you want me to refer to you, full name?
Just call me Greg. I mean, Greg Girard for intro. And
okay.
You can call me Big Daddy Little G Money if you want. That's what my kids used to call me.
Done. I might leave that in. All right. All right. I am here talking to Greg Girard, who is the executive director of the Beloit International Film Festival. That's at beloitfilmfest.org. That's beloitfilmfest.org for anybody wanting to write that down. Full disclosure, Amanda and I are both on the board of directors of the festival. I just kind of want to talk about the festival and what's so special about it, what's different about it for our area. So welcome, Greg.
Well, thanks for having me on, Aaron. Great to be here and great to have an opportunity to talk about this festival that's like, what is it, 7 days away now?
Yeah, the time we're recording this. And you, first up, tell people what the dates are, because this is a longer festival than many. It runs for 10 days.
Yeah, 10 days this year. In recent history anyway, we've always been running it over the last weekend of February, and then however far that takes us into March. So this year, actually, it's like one of the latest ones that we do. It starts on the 25th, that's Friday the 25th of February, and runs all the way through March 6th, Sunday, March 6th. So that's our window.
And it's Beloit, Wisconsin, just so everybody knows, Beloit, Wisconsin, which, you know, Chicago, Madison, it's kind of halfway between the two of those. I mean, if you really look at it that way.
Yeah, we're in a good crossroads here, I think, you know, because we've got, you know, Milwaukee traffic, we got Madison traffic, we got Chicagoland and Northern Illinois traffic, and of course Rockford traffic as well. And you know, it's a good crossroads spot to be in, and so far so good, you know.
So here's one thing I want to get across to listeners, because, you know, we've actually talked about BIFF on previous podcasts from years back. It doesn't mean everybody listened to that episode. You might be newer listeners, that sort of thing. So can you kind of go through the truncated version of how this festival works versus, you know, what they might see from other film festivals, I guess?
Oh, well, the festival started in 2006. It was essentially three main founders that worked with Diane and Ken Hendricks at that time, who just gotten into the film industry with their Empire Pictures company. And so the founders were trying to base it a little bit, at least loosely, on the original Sundance model, which I guess was, you know, included kind of converting some downtown places into theaters. Mm-hmm. And of course, Sundance has grown into something quite more elaborate since that day. And we have had varying degrees of separation from that original concept. But right now, for the last, I would say the last 5 years anyway, we've been a downtown walkable film festival. All of our venues are now right in the downtown, the city center. And some of them have permanent projection installations, and others we manufacture each year out of thin air and install projection systems. And there, you're going to see rooms that are all different shapes and sizes. We've got one room that's maxed at 200 people, and we've got another room this year that's maxed at 40 people. So it kind of runs the gamut everywhere in between that. We feel like it's got a certain charm about it. It's old school, but it's all, you park once and you can go to every venue fairly easily just by walking. And it's the one thing that we kind of have on some of the bigger festivals that surround us on the perimeter, like Wisconsin Film Festival in Madison. You know, you kind of have to get in your car and drive to wherever you're going to go for the next film.
Right.
Same with Milwaukee. It's kind of it's you either got to Uber your way or drive your way around town to get to all the venues. And of course Chicago. This is the one little boast that we have with our little boutique festival here.
Don't undersell it, because I will say, you know, when I first started visiting the festival, I always thought that that was a nice, you know, because I've done South By, I've done Sundance, I've done multiple film festivals, and I really appreciate the very walkable kind of hometown feel to the festival, because it is a little different than some other festivals. It's not just in movie theaters or anything like that. It's actually part of local businesses. It's actually supporting local businesses and local venues, which is great. And they do have, you know, different setups. One might be in the back of a store. One might be the full restaurant. You know, it might be actually like an addition. One at Domenico's is literally like basically their banquet hall separation or something. I mean, there's a lot of different ways it's done.
Exactly. We've tried, oh man, over the years, we've tried all kinds of places downtown. This year we're using Domenico's Italian American restaurant as a duplex, I guess you'd call it. We're going to have two theaters in there, one in the patio room and one in the banquet hall. And, I think what it does is it gives a kind of a cozy feel. I mean, our filmmakers that come to town, they always comment that it's just kind of a real friendly environment. You know, you're not in a sort of a sterile theater situation. You're in these rooms and everybody's close together, and you know, we're all in these kind of unique environments, let's just say. And people are really less likely more likely to let their hair down a little bit. It's very familiar kind of and very casual social, as opposed to real more formal. So I think that's a plus for us.
And I will say the timing has worked out great for the festival, because it's become a much more manageable in-person event currently than it would have been maybe a few weeks ago. So things are definitely trending well in that respect.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the slow descent of Omicron and you know, some of this pandemic stuff that's been lingering here and probably will linger for a while. I don't know. It's so hard to tell anymore. When I started plotting out this festival lineup, it was October. Delta was on its way out and Omicron hadn't even appeared, you know. And as you know, we've jumped through some real hoops here with changing schedules and venues and having to move things around, accommodate this gosh darn pandemic.
There's a virtual component too to this festival because of that, which means that if you can't make it to Beloit, you can't make it to this general area for the festival, you could still technically participate, could you not?
Yes, you can. I mean, we're hoping to get the lion's share of our films up on virtually, of course. Some filmmakers don't want to participate virtually. You know, they've got things like another festival coming up. So you can't geo-block them to a certain area. They don't want to be up on the internet while our festival is going on. So we're dealing with a little bit of that, but we'll have a nice cross section of our films available. We're hoping to have all of our finalists, our awards finalist films up and available, and a really good taste of BIFF.
If somebody is debating whether they want to come or not to the BeloitFilmFest.org, huh? There you go. I'm going to plug it one more time. Sell them. Other than the walkable festival, why should they come check it out?
For one thing, one of the coolest parts about being at a festival, you know this, is access to filmmakers. It's very casual downtown. You're going to see filmmakers walking around all over the place, particularly on the weekends. And they're very approachable. And it's, you know, likely that you could do a Q&A with filmmakers and end up having coffee with them next door in a coffee shop or at a food and beverage place. My experience with other festivals, bigger festivals, is that doesn't necessarily occur as easily. We're all very, you know, we're in the same very, you know, kind of smaller area down here. So access to filmmakers, I think, is one of the things that people really enjoy about our festival. Beyond that, I think that our selections are, I think the films that we select here every year, some of them are ones that that come from noteworthy film festivals like South By and Sundance and Slamdance and, you know, Cinequest and all that stuff. We usually get, you know, a certain amount of that fare. And then we get stuff that's just playing straight ahead, you know, like little gems, unknown gems of indie films. And so our festival schedule is very unique. And we've got just a little something for everybody. And this year we've even got a little more for everybody because we're introducing some new genres into the lineup. We've never really been much of a horror genre festival. And even science fiction and fantasy haven't been a real focus factor for Biff. But we're trying to expand, you know, our audience reach, and so you're going to be able to see a little bit of that sort of fare this year. We're not overdoing it, but we do have a nice sprinkling of those new genres in the lineup as well.
Yeah, and I also should mention, which I hope we can continue to expand, because I think that would just bring more people to the area. And definitely, if you have ideas, please let us know. We're always open to new filmmakers, new ideas. I also kind of want to know, you know, there's a local component, which I find very cool for the festival, which is that, you know, there's actually a competition for local filmmakers, which regional, Illinois and Wisconsin, basically. Mm-hmm. For those filmmakers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, just a little history on that. When the festival started, it was a 4-day festival. So it ran from a Thursday through Sunday. When it, after 10 years or so, they bumped it up to 10 days. And when it switched to 10 days, well, then it was kind of now we got 2 weekends to deal with. So how do we guarantee that we're going to have, you know, a suitable turnout from filmmakers on both weekends? So the plan became, you know, let's make the first weekend all about our regional filmmakers. Not that we don't show other, you know, films from other domestic films from the United States and from, you know, around the world as well. But we really focus and highlight the regional filmmakers. We came up with this thing called the Wisconsin-Illinois Showdown. And it's not quite the rivalry of a Packers-Bears type thing.
Nothing is.
No, but it is a way for to just get a little excitement going amongst our Wisconsin and Illinois and state line area filmmakers and, you know, give them a reason to come up here and gather. And, you know, to be truthful, Aaron, you know, a lot of these filmmakers have a hard time getting into festivals. You know, the like Milwaukee filmmakers that can't get into their own film festival.
Right.
And I'm sure Chicago and Madison area filmmakers as well. So we thought, well, let's have a place for some of these up-and-coming filmmakers to go. And so it all works out great. It's a great, you know, symbiotic relationship, I guess. We give the FaceTime to all of these filmmakers, and they fill up our streets and venues for the opening weekend of the festival. So that's kind of how that developed, and it's really been a lot of fun. You know, because these are mostly people that don't have to fly in, so they can just drive down or drive up from Chicagoland, and they can bring a whole army with them. They can bring, you know, they can bring the whole crew. Sometimes they do bring the whole crew.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun, and it's a strong way to kick off the 10 days of Biff.
Absolutely, and again, some of the magic is you can go see a movie, and then you can have dinner sometimes very, very close, or maybe even in the same facility, the same venue. And,
yeah.
You know, that also makes it very, very easily accessible to people that are just, they want to have, you know, dinner and a movie or something like that. It's just, mm-hmm. It's a really cool film festival that is more relaxing and laid back than I think. It's not stressful. You know, you can come and enjoy your time and probably run into filmmakers as well as Greg and myself. I'll probably be there on varying days. And I think Amanda, I'm sure, will be there. We'll definitely be there for the awards event on March 5th. So, I mean, is there anything you want to say in closing about Bloit Film Fest?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, just talking about our restaurants and stuff, for those of you who haven't been to Beloit, you know, in recent history, it's really gotten a wonderful downtown facelift. And
really
we've got a whole variety of new restaurants and bars. It's just such a cool place to be all of a sudden. When I first moved here in 2007, it wasn't what it is today. Let's just say that. And we're so very proud of all of the food and beverage and shops, all those offerings that we've got going down here. So going on in downtown Beloit. So that is, you know, come down and taste some of that flavor. Beyond that, if I wanted to say a little bit of a closing thought here,
sure.
We've got some great special events. We've got our sing-along film, which will be the Monkees film, and we're going to be singing all those great Monkey songs up at the castle. We've got another great classic film event that we're doing with First National Bank and Trust, and that's going to be E.T. the Extraterrestrial this year. So we don't. It's not all about, not entirely about indie film. We do some kind of fun and sort of family stuff too that you can enjoy in the downtown or near downtown as well. And I do want to mention to people that we have a couple of films that we expect to be our version of a blockbuster here. And of course, I'm talking about The Six, which has local ties. The story of young Chinese men that were on the Titanic and were rescued, and it's their journey. And part of it lands in Janesville, Wisconsin, which is our sister city just to the north here. So, you know, we're expecting that to be it's already sold out two showings. So
wow.
That one's going to get legs. You should definitely come and see that one. And also, I love Americanish, which is a film that actually you found, Aaron. And thank you for curating that one, because it's just perfect for our Beloit audiences. It's got just such a, it's a great story. It's really well told, and it's got some stars in it, and it's a rom-com, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't want that? So please come down and check out those two films for sure. Those are my top recommendations right now.
Absolutely, and tell people where they can find tickets. They want to come to the event. They want to do it virtual. They want to show up. Whatever they want to do, where do they need to go?
Yeah, well, of course, BeloitFilmFest.org is your one-stop shopping center for all things BIFF. And you can find information there for ticketing. You can just go to the film list, click on the film that you want to see, and you can buy the film right there, buy your ticket right there. We are going to be doing most of our trade online this year. We're asking people to purchase their tickets online. But we will have a box office on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, both weekends. We will have people at our box office, which is at it's called Celeb and Gallery ABBA. It's 437 East Grand Avenue in downtown Beloit. It's a facility that the college has right downtown, and so they give that to us every year to use for our box office. And you'll have wonderful, warm humans there that can help you purchase your tickets, and then you can go to your venues and see your films that way. And then anything else that you need to know, like I said, it's all there at BeloitFilmFest.org. We've got a wonderful, wildly heralded website that is just chock-a-block with everything that you'll need to know.
So, widely heralded. So, that's how you sell it. There you go.
Yeah, I'm a pitch man.
There you go. Well, thanks very much, Greg, for coming on to sell this. And I want to tell everybody, make sure you go check it out if you have the opportunity. I will probably be at the First Americanish screening. I'm going to be at the awards banquet, so hopefully I'll see you guys there too, and probably around town as well, because there's a lot of good places to eat in Beloit, and I'm not suffering from hunger.
All right. Well, thanks again for this opportunity to come on and speak to your audience, Aaron. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on. And remember, everybody, next time you go to see a movie at Beloit International Film Festival, make sure to buy popcorn.
Yeah, absolutely.